When was the last time you had done the reading?
I just do it after this update maybe. It is the main one, maybe. Update one. So we did the sheet.
So.
So just first just to not do it.
Yeah, and
Kind of out of the water.
What doesn't work?
No, it's not rotating or any movement. It's not showing any movement. Like I need to walk down.
Yeah, they are at the exact same location, so you just translate them. That's like 10.
Yeah.
5, 7, 5, 7. And that's translation to a 2 or something. Yeah, so try to run and see if you have to.
Quarter past, we start again, second session. Are there any questions to the previous class this morning?
No questions, so assume everything is clear. Good. So we continue from the previous session. So I mentioned about the challenges in terms of identifying the image quality or evaluating the image quality in hyperspectral, multispectral, any spectral imaging, mainly because it's the final objective is not only visualizing the image, but used for many different purposes. For example, classification, detection, and so on. So then it could be based on specific applications. Okay, I will talk about the application area later today. So in that case, you can see that, okay, you use it for example, classifying land in remote sensing, classifying minerals in remote sensing. In such cases, you can see how accurately, how precisely your spectral imaging system could classify. And based on that, you can say that, okay, the images are good. That's why the reason I'm getting classification. But some parameters, like for example, based on the imaging system, based on the imaging system, it's possible to find out certain distortions. For example, one of them is keystone distortion, which is very common in any hyperspectral imaging system. This is mainly because of the, remember the keyword, spatial misregistration. You can see that from the example below. The one with no distortion, there is. Oh, yeah. So the one with no distortion, you can see that, okay, spectrally everything, or at least the color which represents the spectrum, is almost very uniform and well distributed. Here you can see that spatially there is some distortion, right? On this one. And such distortions are called keystone effect. And this is very common in case of hypospectral imaging. And this could be in the order of some micrometers. Micrometers. So basically enlargement or reduction of the spatial areas. And then there is another one called the smile effect. You can see it looks like smile. It's mainly because of the spectral misregistration. Just remember the keyword spectral misregistration. And you can see that in the same line, if you take the color, which the spectrum represented by the color, it is not uniform. Spatially, the whole area, if you actually look at the rectangles, it's uniform, but spectrally not. So such effect is called the smile effect or smile property. So it's basically the wavelength shift caused by the change in dispersion with the field position. So basically, you know that there is a dispersive element, prism or gating or whatever, which will disperse the light, but it will not be falling uniform on the sensor. And that's the reason mainly the smile effect. So it's possible to evaluate the quality of a system or a data derived from a hypospectral system based on such parameters. Then the sensor non-uniformity. That means in the sensor itself, if you have a uniform sensor, you imagine it like a two-dimensional rectangular array. And there are many, every pixel represented by a rectangular part of the sensor. And it may not be true that every pixel is equally sensitive. Some area may be more sensitive than the rest. So that could also create sensor non-uniformity. An example I could say is that in this example, it's not really visible, but it's also in order to match with everything in technically in the system. Sometimes this pixel size may not be the same with each other. It may not be uniform. So that means you would get an array of pixels, but with different sizes. Different size means it will cover different amount of area, especially. Clear? If you have any doubts, feel free to ask. So we have a system here, and I could tell you a case where we detected this. We were not sure about this case. We scanned a painting, and the painting was very big, so we scanned it as many pieces, and we tried to club them together. So for example, if this is one part, this is another scanning. You know what we do if there is a bigger one? We would keep some overlap, so that when we stitch it together, we could use the features from here and here to make it perfect. So we tried to assume that these are two scans, two images. So we tried to stitch it together, and then what happened is it was never be perfect. And one of the reasons, then later we found that the size of the pixel was not the same from here to here. Just like what you see here. The size on this side is larger compared to this side. So this is my first part, this is the second image. So when with respect to this plot, here the pixel size is bigger and here it's smaller. And in the next image, here it's bigger, smaller. So at this point, when you're trying to stitch it together, you are basically stitching a small pixel with a large one. So
yeah, is this what causes the keystone and smile?
This is not from the keystone smile.
Okay.
This is another kind of distortion.
Okay,
this distortion is it's a distortion which comes from the difference in the pixel arrangement. To make the other things, we cannot optimize everything. This is the best they could optimize in terms of the pixel size. But normally the manufacturer of the system provides us this plot. So we have a data, and it's possible to change the size of the pixels by using this information and then make it uniform and then do the stitching. I did mention about the spectral reconstruction error. So in the very beginning I said that, okay, in multispectral you have only few points, right? And in hyperspectral you have many closely spaced points. So to make the first one, multispectral, looks like a hyperspectral or a continuous curve, you need to reconstruct the curve based on the available information. Sometimes we would be perfect, but not always, based on the final curve or based on the ground truth. So there are many spectral reconstruction algorithms. I think I will also upload a paper on the review of spectral reconstruction, so then you can find it. You would need it if you are working with the multispectral imaging. Then there is hyperspectral data structure. So I will give you a very base information, then you can follow this link to see more illustrations and find out the details. So far I always took an example. The hyperspectral image is like a cube, pages of a book, right? That's an easy way to visualize how the data is organized. But it's not true all the cases. That's easy way of visualizing. But when it comes to reality, in a hyperspectral imaging system, there are many different ways of organizing data. So one could be, as I said, as a cube with the pages of a book. That's an easy way to visualize. The other way could be, the first band would be put like this. So it can be in the form of first band, second band, third band, and so on. That's one way. The other way is also like towards the width. So there are different way of placing the inner data in a file. So band interleaved by line, band interleaved by pixel, and band sequence. These are the mainly used spectral data representation in a file.
The one you have seen, this type one?
Band sequence. There is also, why should you know about this? Because when you start making any programs for analyzing the data, then you should be knowing whether you have to pick up the information from this point first and then move to this point, or so basically in a for loop, where to hit the data. Yeah, that's all. But it's possible in many systems to convert from BIL to BIP and so on. So it's not a big issue, but you just be aware about this. Follow this link below to find out more detailed information. As I said, there is not really a standardized workflow. A standardized workflow means standards for hyperspectral image data. Where there are initiatives, for example, IEEE initiatives P4001, so standard for characterization and calibration of UV through shortwave hyperspectral imaging devices. So there they actually make standards about the data processing and so on. So you can read if you want this P4001. To know more about the standardization procedures. So I quickly go through an activity that we have done to identify the quality of different devices. So this was part of a European project called COSH, Color and Space in Cultural Heritage. If you want to read more about that, you can just search COSH Cultural Heritage and you get details about the project. So in that project, one of the working group, the first one, was more about spectral object documentation for cultural heritage. So in this activity, what we have done is a round robin test. The round robin test, we have actually identified a set of objects with the reference. So here it's a metallic icon, then it's a color checker, a reference target, then this is a painted target with underdrawings, many different pigments, and a white reference. What we have done is we actually sent these targets to many different partners all across Europe and asked them to scan it. We did not give them any instructions. Do it as you do in your routine. So if I get this sample, then I would just do it normally. How would I do spectral imaging in my lab? So every partner on this list, they did the same. And then what we wanted to know is how much this data is in agreement. Because in ideal case, all the plots should be the same, right? Because you are looking into the same object with very similar devices, or ideally all the imaging devices have the same objective, get the spectrum from the sample. But it was not the real case.
So how many different devices you had out of these 19 suppliers?
Okay,
yeah.
I don't...
Diversity of
systems. Yeah, it was diverse. I don't remember the number, but it was diverse. But the surprising thing is that even the people, or even the groups, they were using the same devices, exactly the same make, did not give the same data. It would happen if it is not a matter of repeatability, because we asked everyone to do it many times and give the best data or give the most repeating data. So that was not the issue, but the main thing was people were using different imaging workflow. All of them, they were saying different light sources, different references. Ideally, it should all produce the same, but it did not. So this was an experiment to find out the importance of quality and how to make sure that certain workflow will make it better. So you can read results of this paper. One of the paper that I have shared with Peter, he will upload in Blackboard, is an output of this study. And based on that study, what we have done is we analyze the data, and then we come up with a standard workflow. Okay, if you follow this and this and this, at least it will be better. It's the same thing from two different places. So if you do a multi-spectral imaging and do apply two different reconstruction algorithms, it can result like this. Talking about polarizer, so you know the spectral reflection, we can reduce that using polarizer. There is a team of French researchers coming next week to our lab to study the effect of polarizers to reduce the spectral reflections. So this is very much applicable in case of spectral objects like these icons.
Just for confusion, the right one, as
no, the left one. So now we soon switch to the different application areas, which was the plan for this session. Just before I close, we were talking about hyperspectral imaging. So the hype in spectral imaging, basically. So if you look at there is a lot of new activities happening in the hyperspectral imaging. So the hype is going like anything. As you can see, the number of published papers, if you see, when it comes close to 2020, it's progressing quite quite a lot. So you can read this hype in spectral imaging by reading this paper below. Now let's see whether it is just a hype or whether it is something useful. So this part I will talk about different applications, selected application areas and using spectral imaging. So remote sensing, medical imaging, cultural heritage, food inspection, forensics and many more. So as I said in the first session, this basically started with application remote sensing. Satellites. Even now, if you actually look at different satellites that sent by NASA or other space agencies, you can see that they always keep a spectral imaging system, a multi-spectral imaging system. May not be a hyperspectral imaging system which captures hundreds of bands, but at least 6-7 bands in a selected region. So that's for sure in every space mission. So it started from remote sensing. And the goal was to identify the vegetation, soil, water content, minerals, oil, and so on, and still in use. Something related to the remote sensing, one of the main conference, you know, we should be aware of where do we disseminate, where do we find the results of different things happening in about a specific area. So it's a Whispers conference which is happening this week in Rome, and this is one of the main conference on hyperspectral imaging or spectral imaging for remote sensing. A couple of researchers from Color Lab, one of them is Federico, is attending the conference and presenting the results. You can also read past traditions, there's a website which gives you all the information. So now we talk about from the sky to the lab. So it's not the same experience when you actually take these systems which is used in satellites and aircraft to the lab. There may be more distortions or less distortions and less things to do when you bring the camera to the lab. Sometimes people may not care about, for example, the geometrical distortions when you actually look at it from the sky, because there the main objective is to classify a larger area. But if you start scanning something in a close range, then you immediately find out, oh, geometrically this is very much distorted, because it's very much visible to you. And then you need to solve new issues, new problems. So this is one of the systems, just to give you an introduction about how the normal systems look like. Here you can see that the black one, that's the camera. Here. And here there is a, so the camera is fixed here, and there is a moving platform, and you keep the object here. The reason is that it's a line scanner. So again, you have the camera, you have the scene which is moving. And it's all synchronized. So if you change the integration time of the camera, if you increase the integration time of the camera, the object, this platform will move slowly. So that means your camera will look into this object for a longer time. And if you increase the integration time, or if you decrease the integration time, that means it will scan very quickly. So you can scan it very fast. It's one arrangement. This is the setup we have at Color Lab. We don't have this much rack. Have you been to that room? A010? Okay. No, next time. So you will see this arrangement there with the two cameras with a longer moving platform. right would be normally 45-0-45, the standard geometry. And many of these cameras does not have a flexibility to adjust the focus like the other normal cameras. So we need to move the camera up and down to the object. And this is another setup that we have in the color lab. It's a XY stage. So in this case, as you see, the platform moves only in one direction. This part will just move only one direction. So in this stage, in this system, it's set up, we have a moving camera. So the object will remain in the same place. So for example here, we're scanning a painting. So the camera will move up and down, and also to the side. So you can basically decide how many times you want to scan the object, different stripes, and then you can enter this into the software and it will scan that many times. You can also decide on what's the overlap that you should put so that later you can stitch it over. This is another arrangement, rotating stage. So here you can basically place the camera on a tripod, aka tripod with a where you can actually control the rotation. So if you have a higher integration time, then it will move slowly. If you have a longer integration time, it moves fast. But you know, this could this setup could create some distortions. So if this is your object to be scanned and this is the head, but when your camera is moving, it's not always the same distance to the camera. So there is an angle of distortion. And if you know how much angle and all the other things, basically you can then undistort. You can recover. And the different setups.
One point I remember. In the very beginning, the struggle with the geometrical setup, also with the tripod where the camera is mounted, and if that is slightly half degree out and not exactly 90 degrees to the object, that did cause a lot of post-processing.
Yeah.
So that is a kind of an important key point to
it's
keep in mind.
It's a good idea that you mentioned that. So it may take several hours or even days to make the initial setup. But once you have the setup perfect, you can have a good quality data. But if not, as Peter said, you can have a camera which is slightly half degree tilted. Then you can write code for a week or even more to fix the data. And even then, it may not be the perfect spectrum. So it's worth being patient and spend some more time to make sure that the arrangement is perfect as possible in the beginning. Sometimes you feel, oh, why should I spend time on making sure that? So you need to use the water level or spirit level and those kind of things with every screw tightened and before you do the imaging. Otherwise, we have experienced people spend many weeks to fix. Normally, when we do the imaging, it's in a dark room, so it's not very pleasant to sit there for long. So if you spend several days to scan and create a data set, and finally if you found that, oh no, it was not the right way to do, then you need to repeat it. Yeah. So some preparation is good to save the time. So then we talk about medical applications. I think we have a friend here who is is who has some experience with the medical.
That was Nick.
Okay. What did you do with the?
We're just doing the transports for like analyzing multi-spectrum CAT scans and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. And did you also capture data?
No, it was just data analysis.
Okay. So there is a lot of applications in the medical purposes. So basically the light can penetrate the tissue and can reflect and give you more information. So sometimes the tissue absorbs light and sometimes it reflects and transmits. So based on what you are looking for, you can basically, so there are some systems. In every case, what you need to be aware of is not every system is suitable. For example, we mentioned some specs and some technical, for example, filter wheel, LCTF, push broom, all different kind of things. You may not be able to use many of these things for medical purpose because you expose your body, skin or whatever, with the light, and then it will take some period to do the imaging. And there is chance that it will move. And if your system is not able to capture things before it moves, then you can get different information. So then the choice of imaging system is very important. So it depends on the purpose. For example, here you see different different applications in medical imaging. The imaging system need to be identified. So there is, so for example, the diabetic food, it's possible to do that with the LCTF in the range of 500 to 600. So it has been already studied what spectral range is most suitable to study the diabetic food. And it's in the reflectance mode. So we have discussed only about the reflectance mode. It's also transmittance mode. So basically you have the light source below, and then you have the object here, and whatever that can transmit through the object, you capture from the top. So that's the transmittance imaging. So in some cases it's a transmittance imaging, and then fluorescence imaging. For example, you know, in medical, the doctor injects some fluorescent agents, and then based on that, they can capture images.
Just one question. The instrument that
Georgiou
made,
is
that
that's a transmittance. So he's referring to an instrument in the lab which can do the transmittance measurement, a multispectral camera. We also have a hyperspectral system which can do transmittance measurement. One of the PhD students here, Anise Babini, she is studying stained glass windows. So she was scanning stained glass windows in Swiss National Museum to find out the different elements present, you know, there is dirt and other things in the window. So it's possible to study those things in the transmittance mode.
I have a question. So with the reflectance mode, we have the tile that is like a reference.
Mm-hmm.
With the transmittance mode, what is that reference?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Example. So that's a very good question. So now you have object here.
Mm-hmm.
You have the light here. We need to know how many photons we are sending, right?
So
if you remove this object,
yes, that's what I'm saying.
Then the light is going directly to the camera. So we don't need a reference in that case.
I'm thinking about the cases where we had like different shades. That also doesn't apply here, right?
No.
Okay.
But there is also, to make the light uniform, we may use diffusers.
Oh, okay.
In that case, this is your object,
mm-hmm.
this is your diffuser, so you keep it on the diffuser and you send the light from here. So in that case, the reference is basically nothing on the top but the light from the diffuser. So the main objective with the reference target is to know how many photons we are sending. So this is just a glimpse of what kind of measurement mode, which says reflectance, transmittance or absorption or fluorescence, and then what kind of dispersive element we could use, then the type of sensor and so on. You can see that the last one is basically in the near IR from 900 to 1700. So the paper I also give to Peter, so he will upload, so you can read the full paper. Basically in that paper you will see these images where you can classify different tissues based on the spectrum. So the tumor and the muscle has different spectral shape, so based on that you can basically classify. The same with for example, the cancerous cells and different diseases, it will produce different spectrum.
This tumor is for the skin or right?
It is on different parts. How deep this can actually go. It will not penetrate like X-ray. But if there is a surgery and then they want to investigate on that, then it's possible. But it will not penetrate too much into the skin.
It will be open surgery, right?
Yeah. So, based on this slide, you can see that what is to be considered. Basically, the spectral region. For every medical application case, there will be a specific wavelength range that we should be aware of. Then the spatial resolution, if that is to be considered, then the technology to be used. Then another major application area that we are doing here at Color Lab is spectral imaging for cultural heritage documentation and analysis. There are several PhD students and researchers working on this topic. Tabitha is working on
ancient
manuscripts. So she may be using spectral imaging in her study. So then what's the motivation? So we know that in museums and cultural heritage organization, they do digitization. And most of the digitization is for the purpose of documentation. What's the current status of that specific object? So the high image resolution is of great interest because you need to have very precise data. Then penetration is another important thing. If you want to look into the under drawings, people are always curious what's behind. Sometimes more curious than what they can see. So the penetration is another important thing that they would like to know. Then high-fidelity reproduction of art paintings and other objects. So you may want to have an art painting which is very close to what you see in the gallery. And then how can we get that? Then non-destructive material identification. That means, as I think I mentioned, in many cases, if people in the museum, they want to restore something they missed on the paintings, lost from the painting, then how to identify what they lost? they need to study the pigments. So what they normally does is they basically pick up micro samples from the painting and then they do the point spectroscopy or the spectroscopy, which is limited to only some points. And if they want to study the whole painting, then they need to pick up micro samples from every point, which at the end destroy the painting. There is no point of doing that. So, but in, with the spectral imaging, you can get the spectrum non-invasively from every point. And this spectrum, which represent the material at that point, so you can basically identify the material, the pigments in a painting or an object using spectral imaging. So that's one of the main objectives. Then virtual restoration of paintings. So if you want to restore something on the painting, we don't need to apply directly on the painting. You may have seen some bad examples of restoring directly on the painting and then at the end it end up in undesired results. So virtual restoration is one of the applications. Then study the effect of ambient light. So for everything there is some examples I can show you. We start with the first project on cultural heritage digitization, which is called Vasari in 1989 to 92. So in that case the main purpose was to have a very high color accuracy on the digitization. So there were high spatial resolution, but only 7 bands. So, and that too only in the visible region. So this was the first project. Then there were many extended versions of this first project. The Musa project, the Kassatan project. So in this project, as you can see, they also extended this to the IR region. So there were more number of channels, and here you can see it's also extended to the near IR region. So the objective, when it was started, it was only the colorimetric accuracy, but later it was also on different other objectives, like this was for underdrawings and things like that. So in spectral imaging, as you have seen, or you know it now, that we discount the effect of the ambient light, because you basically divide with the original light spectrum, so you don't have any influence of the original light. So I have some examples on how to simulate different lights, which comes soon. So then this information, this colorimetric information, precise colorimetric information could be used for overcoming the predefined viewing conditions, because you are now independent of the external illumination. Then investigation of underdrawings, some examples here. And the penetration of penetration depth of light. UV, which gives you more information about the surface, visible as you know what you see, and then IR, it penetrates. And then there is terahertz imaging and so on, which can actually go more deep into the object. But not like you cannot see the other side of the wall. You may see the wooden support and so on, but not like X-ray, which will pass more deeper. Different visualizations. I mentioned about different RGB false color imaging and so on. We use this information just to find out interesting information from the painting. Okay, I think I don't have that the slide here. So when we were doing when we did the scanning of this painting a couple of years ago, and with the false color imaging, which you can see the last three images. we could find out more information comes out. There was something written on the sky. It's not visible here. If time permits, I have other images I can show you later. I mentioned about the spectral classification as an example before. So this can be used for classifying different pigments. And the spectral library for this purpose was basically created based on a study which was conducted before. For example, in case of screen, all these points which you can see as an arrow was studied before using other chemical methods. So those points, we were very sure that the ground truth is there. So we used that ground truth for the classification. Sometimes we also use external pigment charts, which you can buy, to prepare the spectral library. This was a spectral mock-up, this was a mock-up, pigment mock-up created by Federico as a part of his COSI master thesis. He has done the unmixing, new unmixing method. You can read that being published in Celsius. Just an example of two different methods used for classification. So as I said before, some methods are better compared to the others in terms of classifying. It's two different pigments which looks like the same. So the first one is lead white and vermilion, the other one is cadmium yellow. Yeah, how does the painting looks like if you have use different light sources? So when we take an image with your normal RGB, normal camera, what you capture is based on is a mix of the external light and the reflected light from here, or the basically the reflected. You cannot discount the external light. Once you have taken the light, the image, then it's all mixed. You cannot separate it. But in spectral imaging, you can basically discount the effect of external light, and you can apply other light sources. So for example, in a museum case, you don't need to physically change the light to see how the painting looks like in a different light source. You can simulate that in your computer if you have the spectral image data.
Is it also equivalent to using just like the filters on this
No, it's not the filters. So you basically have the reflectance image of the painting. So which is the, and then you can apply the light sources with a different spectral power distribution, and then you get the multiplied version of the same. So you can simulate this in your computer. If you want to play with the different spectral power, different light sources, you can find the spectral power distributions of around close to 100 different light sources following this link. So here I can plot only four or five at a time, but you can see that these are corresponding to four different light sources. So in these cases, I have applied three different light sources, and this is how the painting looks like in three different light sources. This is a painting in the Lillehammer Museum. It's also a painting in the museum in Lillehammer. It's one of the smallest paintings by Edgar Munch. So this is one of the application area. For color visualization we have seen. So you can follow this link to
perspective maybe.
So there's n number of different visualization ways. So here it's below, I think it's a different spectral bands. So there are different tools available. IAP image viewer is also very commonly used all around the world.
So picture of the slide?
Yeah, the slides will be shared so you can. So virtual restoration. One example is virtual removal of varnish. This is a project actually done on the real Mona Lisa. So they try to remove the varnish virtually. For that, they also created some data set with the varnish with a different aging. So aging has been, you know, in construction day they do a lot of artificial aging. So you can have an object and you can age it for hundreds of years by changing certain parameters like humidity, temperature, and the way that they change it, how often they change it. So there are theory for that. So based on that, they can actually do the artificial aging and study the changes. Crack detection is another application. So you know, these art objects, they move around the world for exhibitions. So how do we make sure that there is no changes that is happening on the object? So it's possible to do the scanning of the object before it's been moved to another place, and then it's possible to redo the scanning and see what are the changes happening. And some of the changes, if you use the RGB imaging, it may not be able to find out the exact changes, but it's with the spectral imaging, it's more it can go more deeper into the object and see the changes. This is another one called ink separation. So two different inks, and in some lighting conditions it looks so much distorted, but it's possible to separate based on the spectral image. So we create the spectral library based on, for example, these two plots are corresponding to the two inks. And you can also have the spectrum of the paper or whatever substrate, and based on that you can classify. The right one, it's just one specific band that itself you give you some kind of separated image. It was very much distorted and written like this, but if you just pick up, if you select just one band, you see that it's already kind of separate the different inks.
Okay, I was thinking that you take the multi-spectral image and then you image processing and take the ink part out and then you study the ink part.
So you can do the multi-spectral imaging. You don't need a hyperspectral image for this, but we need to know which band is useful,
yeah,
which you may not know before. So if you know which band is useful, then you can just use that specific band to scan the object. So we have a big project called Change. Have you seen the Change poster or Change website? So in that project, we are basically trying to study or monitor the changes. So some of the objects that we are studying using spectral imaging is challenging CH objects, for example, stained glasses, metals, and so on, unvarnished paintings, polychrome artworks, historical glasses. So in, for example, historical glasses, this is a project conducted at the Swiss-Prussian Museum. They are artificially aging the glass and monitor using different imaging techniques. There is also a technological point of view. One of the PhD students here, Deependra Mandal, he is studying the quality evaluation. So I said before, one of the challenges to study the quality of spectral images. So Deependra is studying quality based on the objective. How good the classification algorithm, based on that, he is evaluating which setup is to be used and what integration time or averaging or those kind of things. That registration, visualization, fusion, many things. Some of the projects in this topic, if you want to follow, that the first three projects are we are also involved in. The line perovskites that Tabitha is part of, they are also, we are planning to do spectral imaging. So the next one is hyperspectral imaging to monitor quality of agricultural materials. So it is possible to use it for enhancing the normal computer vision task. So it can be used for classifying fruits based on the quality. For example, if there is any bruise in a fruit, we have studied apple. So we basically artificially made bruises in the apple, and then we studied how early stage we can actually detect it. So if you drop an apple from here, you may not see the changes immediately. But if you look at the spectrum, maybe it would change. You can see the change immediately. So, and that can be applicable for any fruits or vegetables. It's possible to study the defects. Defects which is not visible to us, which may become visible at a later stage. So it can be used for early detection of damages. And as you can see, the second one, predict the ripeness and maturity. It's possible to find out the ripeness of the fruit from the images. So imagine it like you have a basket of fruits in a tray or in a moving belt. Then the camera look it from the top and then say that, okay, this is a very ripe fruit and this is not ready to eat. So you can classify based on the spectral information. It's very common to use these days. We have studies at Color Lab did. I think it was a year ago, the bachelor students conducted a project on studying the ripeness of kiwi. Then potatoes, measurement of sugar and starch. We did not do, but we have planned to do that. Berries, cherries. So it's possible to detect foreign materials if you are actually collecting fruits from the farm or some other places, and if you suspect that there are foreign particles, which is difficult to find out with the human eyes or even with a normal camera. So normally in a computer vision, machine vision system, it's a RGB camera or a grayscale camera which do the sorting job. But it is possible to, so there is a lot of chance for misclassification in such a system. But it can be done much more precisely using a spectral imaging system. And then you may have a doubt, or hyperspectral imaging, it will create a lot of data. So for all these things, we don't need a hyperspectral system. It's only in the beginning to identify what is the most relevant bands. And once you identify that, then you just need to pick up the exactly the correct bands and then do it with a multispectral system.
You also had the strawberry project.
Yes,
okay.
Strawberry is there. So,
okay.
So we are actually active in this area. So next week we are visiting a factory in Oslo. They would like to identify the marbling in meat and pork and beef. So they would like to use spectral imaging for that purpose. So
marbling?
Yeah, marbling, the white stuff in the meat.
It's a layer of fat.
Yeah. Also the meat color. So they actually decide the price of the meat based on the color. And these days, let me see if I...
You remember, I think I was mentioning in the very beginning the project we had on bacon.
Yes.
You know, kind of that we learn, okay, the reflectance is changing over time. So what kind of change in the SPD of the light source is needed so that visually the meat after 1 week still appears a kind of eatable. So as a kind of a cheating application. So it was difficult to kind of to convert that in innovation.
So the price of the meat is actually decided by using several factors. One of them is basically using color charts. So they, the subjective or in the subjective role, so they will basically compare the color with the real meat. And as I, what I heard is that even for the pork, which is basically kind of a whitish, people prefer to get more reddish, and the price is for more reddish meat. So in order to do this, so if a person does this job, then there could be many chances of error. And sometimes they measure, but this measurement is limited to points. So to do this task, they would like to have a new solution. So we are visiting next Monday a company in Oslo to see, so we will go with our spectral camera. So this is one of the other application area. So the goal is to use non-destructive state-of-the-art tools then to identify meat and fat quality. We have to decide, so we first need to find out the problem and then we'll find what tools could be used. So there are many interesting projects on this area which you can talk to us and then help you. So in case of food, what does it basically offer? It offers non-destructive and non-contact measurements. it can give information not just based on a point, or it can give the whole surface or whole area. Then it can does it can do multiple fruits or multiple objects at the same time. So some of the things that we used to hear for fruit grading is basically the color measurements. Then, based on the other parameters like sugar, starch content, SSC, the acid content, and the other parameters, we have at Color Lab, we do have measurement devices for measuring the fruit, the sugar levels, the salt levels, the acidic levels, the ripeness of the fruit. So, and then we also measure the same with spectral imaging systems. So basically we have a ground truth with other systems, and we can correlate that measurements with the spectral changes. This is one of the such work that we have done last year. Basically, contactless classification of strawberry using hyperspectral imaging. So here we did, I think it was more about the firmness. So basically, how mature the fruit is. So that depends on how much force we need to insert into the fruit. So we get reading in the measurement device about how much force we need to insert. And then we will also correlate that with the spectrum from these fruits. So we collected the fruit from a local farm, which is 10-15 kilometers from here in Kaap. And then we scanned in the spectral system. We did a lot of measurements, not just the ripeness, but also the sugar levels. So it's possible to find out how sweet the strawberry based on an image. So those are just examples, but as I showed in case of medical imaging, for every fruit or for every vegetables, there are different spectral ranges of interest. So you can see, for example, first case reflectance mode, strawberry, measurement of firmness. So for that purpose, the interesting spectral range is from 650 to 1000 nanometer. So like this, for everything, there is a spectral region of interest in the electromagnetic spectrum, plus, and even for the same fruit, you can see that for apple, detection of clues is from 400 to 1000 nanometer. There is also detection of different. This is a review of different methods. Then, for apple, you can see that for different purposes there are different spectral region of interest. Then crops. So it's possible to do the measurement from the drones or such systems. This is I mentioned about project done at Color Lab by the bachelor students. We have received a kiwi, 500 kiwis, from a company which supply kiwis in Norway. And then we did measure the firmness of kiwi. So it's when you get into the project, it's more details than we thought of. Like you need to store in a specific temperature, and if you take out from that temperature, it will immediately change. So we had to do this in our best way. 500 kiwis, it took long time. So if any of you are interested, I can share you the report or talk about that project.
What is this? Positive?
Plus, plus, many other things. Okay, maybe we can take a break and then.
Okay. Should we take the half an hour remaining and we regather at 2:30?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very kind of you to postpone it.
No, I don't.
But still, there is Corona going around, so Terry is offering his aid. It's not finished, but.
How did you find it? You didn't check?
Yeah, I know. It's just symptoms, you know, a little bit fever and chill and some throat. This is just for my name.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Did you do 6 months?
Yeah.
Oh.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Oh, that was nice. Yeah.
Did you do the German paragliding or the paragliding?
No, no, no. No, no.
You postponed?
Yeah, I postponed. Oh, we, that money we converted into the sponsoring of an Airbnb for all our kids.
Oh.
So we had an Airbnb with 8 beds for a week.
In Lucerne?
No, in Engelberg, that's 45 minutes by train. So then Christy and I, we were on our own for a week, visiting all my brothers and sisters. Then all our kids, boyfriends and girlfriends, they came. And then we have family reunion one day and hiking. Yeah, plenty of things. It was very nice.
Because after 3 years,
yeah.
2 years.
Yeah. So we decided where to go back next year.
Oh.
Same place. Because there's still some spots also from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I want to explore. I have no time this. Museums,
oh.
Everything. So then you don't have to think.
Okay.
You just so that was really convenient.
Yeah.
No, I say I don't know how to drive, so because you know, with people, you can drive here. Texas is less populated.
Any questions so far?
I have a question.
Yes.
So you mentioned about before doing the classification of the spectral information, we will create the spectral library first. I'm just like confused, like how can we know that this is like this spectral information is belong to this category for the first measurement, like for creating the spectral library?
In
so
some cases, we would have information from many previous studies.
Oh, okay.
For example, here, to create a spectral library, I got this information from a previous study. So then I could get the spectrum from these selected points, and that could be my ground truth. In some cases, for example, this was a study conducted for different unmixing models in an oil painting. In this case, we knew it before. That we knew it means we did the measurement before. So, in case of paintings, sometimes it's already known that artist usually use this kind of pigments. So it's possible to, for example, Munch, what are the tubes used by monks is available in the Munch Museum. They can basically scan and create a spectral library. But your question is very good. In some cases, we need to dig into the black box. We have no information beforehand. So in such cases, we would try to use some brute force algorithm to find out the most pure pigments, pure spectrum. Whatever unique spectrums that you can obtain from the data. Any other questions? We have time, so.
It passes to 3:30?
3:00. So MEAT, I did mention about the possibilities in MEAT. The imaging system that we use in our lab, there is a news in the national TV in Norway, using that for classifying fish, the quality of, or the fish quality assessment using spectral imaging system. So basically this camera, which will detect or look into the MEAT, the fish, and then find out if there is any blood or any such things exist, or it also possible to identify how old the fish is, old in the sense when did they actually cut the fish. So in that way, so it can be used for quality inspection in food, meat or whatever. Yeah, I have that. It's a line scanner, so it basically scans on the way. They are using the same camera that we have in our lab. It's a line scanner or a push probe camera. So it basically, as you said, as you have seen, it scans on the way and then classify online. So different applications. You can also think about different applications, and if it is of interest, we can try to do that.
Do you know how many bands they use?
I don't know. Maybe less. Or they might have used some kind of binding to do this process very, it's a live process.
Okay.
You have seen that it's classified on the way.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was fast.
Yeah, it was fast.
So, this they are detecting the pigment of the blood?
Yeah, I think so. Then we see some forensic applications. So we were part of a project called Multi-Forci, multi-model imaging for forensic purpose. You can find it online. So there they actually does a lot of studies about how to do the forensic investigation using different imaging methods. So for instance, if you have a legal document, how do we identify if somebody has altered anything in that document. So I've been to those meetings, and once I got a sample from the meeting saying that again they conducted a round robin test. So the task was to, they give us three papers and ask me to find out whether it can, are these three papers are the same. It's really hard to find out from the eyes. Are these three papers are the same? Then there were, it's a legal agreement. So there were some signature, some dates. So then the question is the signature is made by the same person in all three pages? You don't find it easily. Then is the signature made at the same time? Is the date and signature is made at the same time? Is the ink used for printing on these three pages is the same? So several questions. It was prepared by police. So then they asked every participant to investigate using, not just using spectral imaging, but also the other techniques. So you can find that the result of that study if you want. If you're curious about that, it's in my you can see there is I think 30 plus authors. It's mainly because so many groups has involved in this study. But it's a pan-European forensic round robin study, part one. So it was me who conducted the spectral imaging in this study. So like this, it is possible to investigate on many different forensic cases, forgery cases, using spectral imaging. Ink classification, another example. We have created data with I think 30 plus different inks, and then tried to classify. Some of these inks looks very similar, but it was possible to classify using spectral imaging. Ink means different pens. Then we did work, Peter and we did work on classifying paper based on the spectrum. So paper used for different purposes. So Peter made a chart like this, just similar to a color checker. He made a paper checker, and then we did study for classification. For forensic investigation, so in morning one of you asked a question about where can we use this portable hyperspectral imaging devices. So as you know, when there is a crime happen, what normally the forensic people, they come to the scene and then they take many micro samples from the scene, or samples from the scene, and after a while the scene will be cleaned and everything will be taken away. But the problem with that is everything for that investigation depends on those small samples they take. And once they take away, there is nothing exist. But if you do the same with a spectral camera, you are actually documenting the whole scene with all the material information. It could be many things that was present there, which might be of the same color. There is chance of missing evidence if you don't pick up all the samples. So instead of using the RGB normal imaging camera for the documentation, if you use a spectral camera, there is more chances of precise documentation, and which stays forever. And in the same scene, in the crime scenes, there might be objects which looks very similar. For example, there could be body fluids, if there is a blood and wine and other things at the same time, and if you take a picture with a normal camera, it may look like the same. So you may not be able to find out whether what you see in the scene is basically blood or wine or some other thing. Then this is another example. What if the crime scene which is difficult to see because the background is disturbing, or there are maybe too many reasons for missing the evidences. So this is one of the possibility using spectral imaging to solve these issues. I think I don't need to explain you this a lot, but you can imagine how better the documentation if you use spectral imaging compared to a normal imaging system. So for many things, for example, for blood, it is already been studied well. So you can see that the blood, how the spectrum changes with respect to time. So there are certain peaks which will change. So you can see that even after 26 days, it may be possible to go back. So for example, if somebody find a crime scene after 3 days, but don't know when the crime was happened, it's possible to do the mapping backwards and find out when this was originally happened. So this is how the blood spectrum changes with respect to time. They are just in the visible region. This is the spectrum of different body fluids. So this is applicable not just for blood. The changes can happen also for other body fluids. We did study different beverages, how it changes in a paper tissue. So we poured the beverages, different juice and alcohol into a paper tissue, because we think that, okay, you can see that the tissue is one of the things that you can see in a bar or in a party. So if you have those evidences, if you find those evidences, then it may be possible to go back and do the mapping with respect to time. So we did experiment that with our imaging system. You can see the setup here. And then we tried to see how the spectrum changes with respect to time. So what we did is we did scan our sample at different time intervals. Like for example, immediately after pouring the beverage, then after 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 1 hour, 3 hour, 1 day, 2 day, and 3 days. And every time we did scan, and then we tried to see how the spectrum is changing. And then what we did is we tried to see if you get a spectrum at the third day, is it possible to find out how old that spectrum is compared to the zeroth hour? It's possible. So just trying to see the possibilities. So if you want to read about more about that, you can find out the paper in Scientific Reports. Yeah, more about the estimation of age from blood stains. Again, for everything, it's it depends on what purpose you use. So this is the conclusion slide. This is a presentation about hyperspectral imaging used for, what's the future of hyperspectral imaging for autonomous vehicles. So as you can see, the main drawback now compared to the other standard camera or other sensors is the cost of the system. Normally the hyperspectral cameras are very expensive. The setup that we have here is few million of photons. So it's a expensive toy to play with. But it's possible to, the prices are coming down, so maybe in future it will be used to more and more. So if you follow the link, you can see the complete presentation about how this would be useful for autonomous vehicles. And with that, I would conclude, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Yes.
Can I ask some questions? Maybe just a few.
Yes.
If you are to advise someone on the area of hyperspectral imaging with respect to medical imaging, what advice would you give to that person? As in someone that is new in the field, what area of research?
In hyperspectral imaging
yeah.
for
we advise the interviewer not to specialize.
So here people I can based on some of the ongoing work here maybe. For example, melanoma detection is one area of work that people are doing with us. So I don't know what you mean by advice.
I just wanted to know the current trend in the area of hyperspectral imaging applications with respect to medical imaging. As in referencing the maybe like the publications, which obtains more correctly.
It's a difficult question, but what I can help you is that I can. After the meeting, after the session, I can get you the latest publication about how what is going to happen for spectral imaging for medical imaging, if that helps. I can try to get that today or tomorrow. Then you can get a complete overview of what is happening and what is going to be kind of future. Yeah.
If you could forward it to the send that email to all of us.
Yeah, I can share that to Peter and then he can upload that. It was published in one of these journals, Biophotonics or Photonics. I think I have that copy, so I will get you those. Then you get more than what I explained. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
In reference to this chart you have up here, what about hyperspectral imaging makes it perform well in bad weather environments?
For autonomous vehicles?
Yeah.
So they say that, one is the weather, it performs better in the bad weather.
What exactly about?
For example, fog removal and those kind of things, they find that it is performing better.
Just by
fog
using the different bands?
Yeah. Fog removal, the identification of different things in the street.
So then the camera will be more expensive than the car.
Camera will be more expensive than the car. Any? You have questions?
I actually have this question on behalf of a friend who has joined online.
Yeah.
So, do you use common deep learning models like BGD, some ResNet on top of this multi or hyperspectral data, or you develop new ones?
Deep learning for hyperspectral imaging. It
on
depends
top
on the.
Of hyperspectral imaging.
It depends on the purpose. So. So
in one slide, you with the food treatment.
Yeah.
Depending on the if it was apple, mushrooms, or other, the last column, I think that is the answer to.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This question is actually from Dimitri.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually has a question for you that if we can develop this project from this area for our course.
You mean the comprehensive literature review? What was the particular topic, also the machine learning
for
algorithms for?
I think I will ask, can he turn on, if this is available on Zoom, he can just switch on his mic and ask the question.
I'm not on Zoom now, because the system is working again. So who is that? Is that Dimitri?
Dimitri, yes.
Ah, where is Dimitri? Did he send me a mail too? There's no mail from Dimitri. Dimitri, can you hear us? Send a mail to me. No, but in general, first of all, thanks, Sonny, for excellent.
There is more questions, I think.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
So, you mentioned in hyperspectral cameras are
spectrum's range extends beyond visible light, right? And in high dynamic range or HDRs, we talk about lightness and not spectrum, I guess. Is that correct?
Yeah.
In HDRs,
yeah.
We just talk about lightness, if the intensity is high or not.
Hmm.
So can you give an example where we use both HDR and hyperspectral cameras to, you know, to an example?
You know, maybe more than me, I think I would refer you to Giorgio Trumpi, and there are some students who did a summer intern project on HDR for hyperspectral imaging, and they should be able to, because I don't have much idea about that, and I think that would be better for I, instead of giving you anything as an answer. So, and they presented that in the COSI event. Did you attend that?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. And some, okay, referring to those presentations, I think a couple of presentations were relevant for today's session. One is Sanam. She presented about how the different light sources could influence the quality of images in for cultural heritage applications when you do hyperspectral imaging. That was part of a COSI thesis. Then one of the interns, they did, or couple of students, they did this on HDR. They actually captured, as far as I know, the images using different exposure time. But I don't know the results. But I think that's something new, maybe we can learn from them. If you don't know that, students, I can leave.
Yeah, no, I do. I think it's Ali and Aksa.
Okay.
I think they will continue their master thesis on HDR.
Yeah.
When are they gonna dig into hyperspectral imaging as well? I don't know. But definitely, so these two are kind of the hot topics, kind of. I'm not sure how much you can benefit to put the hyperspectral into high dynamic range. So.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
It always bounces back to this very famous salami. Do you know what the salami is?
Yes. Salami?
Salami?
Food?
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a big salami, which is the high dynamic range, 1 meter, and then it's all about the slices.
Mm-hmm.
So if one slice is 10 centimeters, so how many slices you get then in 1 meter? 10. If you can translate that into bits, or if you have, you know, 1 nanometer slices, then you have much more information. But the meter remains a meter, also from no light to high light. So that is a further dimension, you know. So now the question is, where do you get these bits from? Are these bits from hyperspectral, or is it sufficient with only 3 channels? That is perhaps the key question.
In response to your question about how good, so for what purpose it could be used to find autonomous vehicles, you can, I put the link in the presentation, but this is from that report, so seeing in the dark, avoid highlight layer, no shadows, see through fog. So this, I think it's a comparison between normal and hyperspectral.
So specifically for seeing through fog, I assume just some bands are affected by the fog less, but you know, focusing on those areas to get a clear image.
So there is more details here, you can read it there.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, any other questions? Which part did you like the most? Okay, so there are many students, many PhD students, and many new projects that we are involved in cultural heritage documentation. We do have a network throughout Europe, like, so for example, this round robin test, the guy who actually did work on that is a research at CTO-RMF in the Louvre Museum. Then we do have strong collaboration with the National Museum in Oslo, Munch Museum, Rijksmuseum Amsterdam, Swiss National Museum, so it's a strong network. Yeah. But you are free to specialize on this in Peter's course or in other projects, so feel free to contact us. What kind of object detection?
I mean, just based on the keywords. I mean, in my undergrad, I basically used geolocation as an object detection for classifying vehicles from the roads. So I just want to know if there is similar kind of project or any kind of project for hyperspectral imaging, spectral imaging.
I think that's MOHIB, isn't it? MOHIB.
MOHIB, yes. MOHIB is doing, but I don't know, he's working on spectral.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But he did also this animal detection.
Yeah, animal tracking.
Animal
is he
tracking.
Giving a talk here?
I need to check.
So there
you
is
I think so.
Object
later
tracking
on.
Related projects
yeah.
going on. It's mainly by MOHIB
yeah.
or Fauci. So just contact. But
yeah.
they are without spectral. They are. Probably it's this slide.
Yes.
This one?
The first rule, object detection, object classification.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone is doing here. But if you have an idea, we can discuss and think about that. So you don't need to limit yourself only the projects that's ongoing. If you have an idea, just talk to us and then we can do that.
That is actually the point I wanted to make. So coming back to the coursework in that course. So I can imagine that some of you might be interested to write a specific comprehensive literature review related to spectral, hyperspectral, and perhaps application cultural heritage. So think about and come up with an idea what you might think that this could be a potential work to write a piece of work. So then we can discuss that and you could elaborate more on that and go ahead.
For instance,
investigation of penetration options. I think we had that for cultural heritage, but that could
yeah.
be for other applications as well.
Last year, I think Hamza, he did write a nice
yeah.
report on the penetration of the veneer
right.
cameras for cultural heritage.
Yeah.
It was a very good report.
So I mean, I want to know that how particular should be our topic. For example, should it be just a cultural heritage, or it should be particularly, for example, varnish removal from paintings?
No, that's up to you. So that is part of the challenge for you guys, to come up with a topic which is feasible within the given time and where you are able also to find some literature. So if you come up with a topic that is completely new, then probably it will be quite difficult to find others' work or others' contribution. But I want you to think then that we would give you a kind of a finalized subject on the plate. So that is part of this kind of working, and not wait until a certain date and then you have a topic and then write up a thesis on that.
So if you
that is master level, otherwise it's not master.
So your question
that
about
is the idea then. I mean, to discuss. Oh, sorry.
I I'll talk another
message.
Time.
Okay.
Now your question about cultural heritage or varnish removal. When you think about that topic, you may not be able to cover such a broad topic. So then you will see that, oh, I cannot do that, I may have to narrow down to a specific one.
Exactly. And once again, I think I mentioned that previously. So you need to have an understanding first, what is a review, what is a scientific review, what is a comprehensive scientific review. And to get this understanding, what you need to do is to dig into, and there are plenty of examples around. And I don't want to feed you with samples from last year at that point. I will show you some examples with the structure and so on. But I want you first to dig into this manual yourself. And once you know, okay, that is the structure, or that is the idea of a literature review, then it is to find an appropriate subject to do the writing by you. Okay?
Amen.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
For the talk. I have uploaded the lecture notes from Michael and all lecture notes of today.
Yeah. The missing one is, I think, the one that you asked me last. So I will find it and upload and share to you feature.
Thanks, Tony. Last thing for cross media. There is the lab session tomorrow and Friday.
Yes.
Okay, there is two groups. First group comes for class 10 to AO12. Second group for class 12. And then 3 and 4 and Friday. Okay, good.
Yes.
Yeah.
has been